Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for today, January the 10th, 2023. I am Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you here with us, presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have a couple of stories for you today, as the name of the show implies. We have a topic that's kind of related to the PGA Tour schedule, Tiger Woods to a degree, not when he's going to play, but kind of what his requirements are going to be as a player who's part of the top players, but not one that's going to play all of the time. And then we have a story related to the PGA Tour's lawsuit and LIV. And we're really just going to kind of wrap three or four different things around LIV from the last several weeks into one 10-ish minute block, and we'll leave it at that. So let's start with not having the show the last few days. Apologies about that. The first week of the year is always pretty hectic. Just trying to get back into the swing of things, trying to get things done. So I kind of got off the rocker a little bit and just doing a whole bunch of stuff, getting GNN Radio set up. Further, better, all that good stuff. So apologies there. But it was a great week at Kapalua. I'm not going to rehash it because it's not the current story of the day. But suffice it to say that didn't see that coming from Colin Morikawa. Did see that coming from John Rahm, though, for him to win the tournament. So kudos to him for winning. We move on to the Sony Open this week. We have a great tournament at Kapalua. Really strong field for this type of event. Tom Kim, Sun Ji Im. You've got Russell Henley, Jordan Spieth, Taylor Montgomery, who's an up-and-coming rookie, Brian Harman, Keegan Bradley, you know, pretty decent field, all things considered, and then a bunch of young guys that are trying to make their mark early in this season with earlier in their careers, and on a golf course that I love, Seth Rayner Influence Design at Wylie Country Club, one of the most fun places to watch golf on the PGA Tour, and how can you go wrong with Honolulu, Hawaii? That all said, that'll be a little bit of a segue into some news that Commissioner Jay Monahan, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, made earlier in the Aloha Swing. And he was talking about the realities of this new world in which we live for the PGA Tour. Obviously, LIV is a consideration, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But the thing that's really important to mention here is that the PGA Tour schedule has been upended in terms of money, in terms of who plays when, and we don't really know the full ramifications of that. And frankly, neither does Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour. The folks involved in this decision-making, Monahan, top players, in consultation with each other, they had really little time, relatively speaking, to put together what we now call the designated events. They get rid of the term elevated events. Forget that was ever said. It's now designated events. And I guess that's because Elevated made it sound like the other events were better than the others, and the PGA Tour has a phobia about that, even though we all know that there are events that are better than others, and there's a clear pecking order, but they don't want you to think that they think that, so they're now designated events instead of elevated events. That all said, they put this together in very short order, right? And then rolled it out very quickly before the next season even began. So one, they could get sponsors in line. Two, they could keep players as best they could from going to LIV if this was a selling point. And it sounds like for several players it was. And they rushed it so quickly that they're not entirely sure about some of the ramifications of exemptions and issues with players skipping and the Ryder Cup and a bunch of other things that have kind of been brought up predominantly by European-born players about what they should be doing in light of it being a Ryder Cup year and in light of the fact that you don't want to play every event, but you want to commit to the events, and you want to commit to 20 events. So the difference is you have 17 designated events, and you have a commitment, if you're a top player, getting money off the PIP, the Player Impact Program, to play in 20 tournaments. So the 17 tournaments, we've been over these, majors, players, FedEx Cup playoffs, the Invitationals, the Century Tournament, the Invitationals, Tigers, Jacks, and Arnie's, the Century Tournament of Champions, the WGC match play, and then four of the rotating designated events, the ones that were stepped up for this year. So you had Phoenix and Wells Fargo and Heritage and Travelers. So that's your 17 this year. And you agree to play three more than that. So you play a total of 20. If you do all that, you did well. You lived up to your end of the agreement on the Player Impact Program. You'll get paid from it. But what about a guy like Tiger Woods, who won the Player Impact Program last year? Won a ton of money for doing basically nothing. He played what, 9 rounds of golf? Great. I mean, great news for him. But he got paid out of the Player Impact Program under a model that was a little bit different when they originally created it. Now this is the guiding light that they're using to determine their most popular players, their top players, and using that bonus money as a magnet, as a carrot, to get guys to commit to being in these 17 designated events, if they're eligible for them, and 20 total events. But Tiger's not playing 20 events. He's not playing 17 events. He might play 6. He might play the 4 majors, maybe the players and his own. I mean, that's being generous, but that's the reality of it. So there's this kind of boil underneath the surface of, hey, what if Tiger wins the PIP again, but he doesn't play the requisite number of events, which he's clearly not going to do, barring some kind of medical miracle. And do you pay him, if you're the PGA Tour, the full value of where he finishes in the PIP if he doesn't play all of the events per this agreement he helped engineer with Rory McIlroy and other top players? Well, Jay Monahan got into that a little bit, talking about really where things stand with the designated events, the Player Impact Program, how this thing all comes together, whether players could have multiple exemptions to miss events, because everyone we know everyone gets one. And Rory McIlroy used his one for Kapalua, so it's kind of weird to start with that, but obviously he intends to play the others. But is there an opportunity to miss several of them if you exchange a designated event for a non-designated event? We don't know that. We don't know that for sure. But we also know that a number of players are deciding to add their, well, at least one of their other events early by going to either Torrey or Amex. And the Amex field is really pretty decent for next week, kind of like this field for Sony. So is there something in the works, or is there something official or unofficially official, that if you go and play an event like that, not saying Amex is a bad event, but just an event you might not otherwise play, do you get an exemption to go skip somewhere else later on? Say you didn't want to play, not beating up Wells Fargo here, but don't want to play Wells Fargo, don't want to be in Charlotte that week. If you play the Amex, can that be your make good, even though you know you're not playing that $20 million field? I don't know. But I think we're starting to get some formality around that from the PGA Tour as they're figuring it out themselves. So Dylan Cher from golf.com posted about an interview with Jay Monahan. I'm not exactly certain if this was his interview with Jay or it was just otherwise done. Really not. So credit to Dylan either way. But Monahan in the interview talks about basically his power as the head of the Player Impact Program, because as the program is constructed, the commissioner has the discretion to award player impact money to players who don't meet the tournament requirement if they have a serious injury or other emergency that keeps them from playing. That's pretty broad powers. And that means, hey, I can award more or less PIP money even if you don't fulfill the requirement, if I think you have a reason to have not fulfilled the requirement. So going back to what Monahan says for the Chair's piece, it says, quote, guys are going to play the event. So that's the policy. I have discretion, okay? This is something we haven't done before. So ultimately, if that happens, guys miss events, then that's going back to your earlier question. At the end of the day, I'll work with our team, I'll understand the situation, and we'll make a decision, end quote. So it sounds like there's some flexibility there. And I think that's really what these players like Rahm, McIlroy, Hovland, the European-born guys that are top-ranked players, really want. They want an understanding from the home office in Pontevedra that they may have to go play on the DP World Tour because they've got to satisfy that membership requirement to get into the Ryder Cup. And if they don't, they can't play. And they've got to do that. They got to find a way to weave in four of those events. You got to weave in somewhere between 17 and 20 of these events, apparently, and make it all work of at least 21, 22, 23 events, somewhere in there, which a lot of players do. They do 20 to 24 on the PGA Tour and then tack on a couple of others elsewhere, perhaps. So it's doable, but how do you make it all happen? and which ones do you pick on the DP World Tour to fit in with the PGA Tour schedule? And can you get two exemptions in a Ryder Cup year instead of one? Or can you do a make good and an exemption, something like that? How does that all work? And basically, Monahan's kind of throwing his arms in the air going, I don't know, we've never done this before. We're just kind of going to feel it out. And then we'll probably see some codified policy here moving forward. This first year, this first season of these designated events is going to be probably a lot of hand-wringing about there not being a formal policy and who gets to do what and why they get to do it and do they get to do it because they're really popular or not, all that type of stuff that's going to come up. And I think Monahan's pretty well acknowledged that at this point, that he's just basically got the autonomy to make the decision if a player needs multiple exemptions, if they need to get paid from the PIT program without fulfilling the full requirement, whatever that needs to be, all of that is up to him. So, okay, what does that mean for Tiger Woods? Because, again, Tiger's not going to play 17 or 20 events. That's not going to happen. He's basically going to play the four majors if physically able, and maybe the player's in his own event. Something like that. And he might play the PNC, but he can ride in a cart with his son, and it's a scramble. So let's not even think about that one. So what does that mean? So Monahan basically says, I'm going to pay Tiger whatever I need to pay Tiger from the PIT program. He says, quote, Tiger isn't going to get a decrease. I think it's hard for me to say what's going to happen until it actually happens, okay? But I don't see that happening. I think that's an acknowledgement from Monahan that, look, Tiger's Tiger. He is the reason this money is here in many ways. And he's the reason the money in the sport got so meteoric in many ways. So we're just going to pay him a lifetime achievement fee for being a leader of the PGA Tour, standing up to Greg Norman, and playing whatever he's going to play. And that's it. And you can deal with that. And I don't think really any of the other players are going to get mad about that because, I mean, they will get mad about it privately. But publicly, they're not going to get mad about it because they know the importance of Tiger Woods. And at the end of the day, if you talk out of school about Tiger Woods and his impact on professional golf and money and PGA Tour and all that stuff, it's going to be a bad look for you. So bottom line is, sounds like there's some wiggle room here for players when they play, how they play. But the tour's kind of official stance is you should play all the designated events and add on three more. And if that can't work for you, we'll try to figure it out. But no promises. All right, let's do the second story for today. Our second story for today really revolves around the latest issues with LIV Golf. There's been a lot of stuff happening in the month of December. And a little bit here just today in court in the PGA Tour, related to the PGA Tour suit against LIV Golf that was initiated by players who left the PGA Tour to go to LIV, and then most of them abandoned the suit, and LIV got involved. So, functionally, it's LIV versus the PGA Tour with a couple players involved. And that's worth knowing, but that's what we're talking about here, that lawsuit. However, this is separate from that, the latest court action. Today, the PGA Tour, in their ongoing lawsuit, has subpoenaed the Saudi Public Investment Fund, their sovereign wealth fund, and Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of said fund, which is financing this league and is, frankly, the guy's largely considered the boss of the league. And that Greg Norman is functionally a figurehead CEO and doesn't really do a whole lot or have a whole lot of, not that he doesn't do anything, but he doesn't have a whole lot of say in final decisions, a variety of things, because this is the Saudis' money and they're going to direct it as they wish. So this comes after a number of court filings. I'm not going to drag you through because only geeks like me really love reading that stuff. But a number of filings back and forth, and then emails from both sides' counsel going back and forth about this that were posted to the online case file for all of this. And basically the gist is LIV and the Saudi Investment Fund, or Public Investment Fund, have claimed that no court in the United States has jurisdiction to subpoena records from the Saudi Public Investment Fund based on Saudi law. Now, of course, that's not really applicable here. But the PGA Tour's kind of claim here is that the Saudi Public Investment Fund has offices in the United States. I believe they say primarily in New York City. So if they have offices here, if they have any kind of presence here physically, then a U.S. court can have jurisdiction and can require a subpoena of documents to be fulfilled Now, the LIV Golf folks and the PIF folks in these variety of emails have said, hey, we'll give you documents. We just have to compile a list and then get them to agree, and they'll probably agree. But obviously, there's no force of law. There's no compelling reason for them to give them everything that's required and under a subpoena, or everything that the PGA Tour requests, or that they even agree to. So that's why, after a variety of emails back and forth, conversations, filings, PGA Tour decided, you know what? We want to subpoena the Public Investment Fund. We want to subpoena documents. We want to know more about it. The motion reads, PIF and Almarion should not be permitted to conduct business in the United States only to hide behind a shell corporation to evade the jurisdiction of this court. And that's the gist of it. Now, where that comes down, we don't know. That'll still be determined. But the reason for these documents, the reason for the request, you know, the subpoena they're filing, is because they believe they will get a lot of information about how the Public Investment Fund got involved, what its true ownership looks like, because there's kind of the Saudis own a company that owns a limited liability company that owns LIV. And so it's like layers upon layers, because that's how you do this kind of thing if you're wealthy or if you just know how LLCs work. And that's why that ownership is struck that way. But the PGA Tour is like, yeah, they might be company on company, but let's be realistic. The PIF owns this thing. We need to know documents from them, because this will give us an idea of what they really are doing. The tour claims that the Public Investment Fund and Almarion, quote, misstated their central role in running LIV and making decisions related to this lawsuit and, quote, strategically withheld documents that prove their control over the startup league. They want those documents. They want crystal clear proof that the Saudis own this thing and they have day-to-day control over it, more or less. And it goes on to say, Elliot Peters, who is one of the lead attorneys for the tour, quote, the owners of LIV, Performance 54, which is a public relations group that does this stuff for LIV and another number of other things, and PIF, the Saudi Investment Fund, were involved in setting this up and using something called Project Wedge before there was LIV. It's critical that we get discovery from them about their activities, their plans, their expectations, their budget, and so on, end quote. And they feel that's the case because that'll give them a better idea of how this all came together, who they talked to, when they talked to them, because the LIV has subpoenaed the tour for the same similar data, like who they talked to, did they interfere with negotiations, did they do anything antitrust, what did they do, did they interfere? And the PGA Tour wants to know, frankly, the exact same thing on the other side. Now, Judge Beth Labson Freeman, who has been involved with this case from the beginning, sounds like she is tending to side with the tour. And she really has from the beginning. And she said during the hearing, quote, if LIV Golf is controlled by these entities, these Saudi entities, then LIV Golf is the entity that should be producing these documents. Their failure to do so may give you grounds for seeking a termination sanction on some of their claims, end quote. So it sounds like they're going to get the docs. And I think the PGA Tour knew that. That's probably why they went down this path of, hey, let's have these conversations and say, oh, well, you're not acting in good faith. Now we're going to go for the subpoena, because that's just a thing you have to do in legal circles. You have to kind of go through the motions. You have to go through everything. And then to demonstrate what you really need to do is X, Y, and Z. In this case, subpoena the Public Investment Fund. So if they get that document or they get those documents, that could lead to a couple of different decision points for the Saudis. One, do they provide all the documents? Two, if they don't, they're in big trouble with Judge Freeman. And if they don't want to provide these documents that the tour requests, do they just back off the lawsuit? Because that's really your next step if you don't fulfill the subpoena. Because Judge Freeman has basically said, look, if the Saudis don't give you the docs that you need, if I rule in favor of the subpoena, then we could just terminate a whole bunch of stuff in their claims and then render their lawsuit effectively meaningless. Lot to consider there. Lot to talk about there. But that's very interesting, and I'm sure it'll lead to more documents down the line. There's been some discovery of documents that have kind of been twisted both ways by both sides about a group called 9/11 Justice, which is a group that was formed in 2022 and formed in Delaware and has the Liv backer say it has a direct connection to the PGA Tour and their PR firm Clout. That seems to be under dispute, obviously, for the PGA Tour and the 9/11 Justice folks. I think that's ridiculous. They're just kind of aligned to mission, but they're not directly connected. The PGA Tour didn't form it. So there's that back and forth happening there. The folks from 9/11 Justice are saying, well, if the Liv folks want all this data about donors and who's giving and who's involved, then they're effectively forming a dossier about 9/11 victims that the Saudi government can then use to harass them. So a lot of war public words there. We'll let that settle itself out over time. But that's the most recent thing in the lawsuit that's related directly to this Liv PGA Tour conversation lawsuit thing. Two big departures that happened in the month of December that we haven't talked about on this show, and I just want to get to them briefly. The COO, Atul Khosla, left. Whether he was pushed out or resigned, we're not sure, because Liv really hasn't talked about it. But he left in December. Well, at least his departure was made public in December. It could have happened anytime, really, from the end of the Invitational Series in October until then. And then Matt Goodman, who was underneath him in the capacity of trying to do business development around these 12 franchises, these 12 teams that Liv's trying to sell as franchises to investors and sponsors, he walked away too. Apparently several others probably did, but they're maybe not as high profile or as big of a name, so they're not in the conversation. But that is an indication that things aren't going necessarily all that well on that front, at least. That they have had a hard time selling sponsorships and selling franchises, and that it's going to be hard for them to kind of get that stuff sold, certainly for February. We don't even know the full Liv schedule yet. We have a really good idea of it, I think. We know more than half, what, 7 or 8 of the 14 proposed events, and I'm sure they're going to announce at least some of the future venues in the next couple of weeks. They've got a month and a half until the season starts for them, so I'm not saying that they're never going to release those events. I'm sure they'll get to it. But you would think that Liv would use any opportunity possible, and they have strategically in the past, to try to make people think they've got momentum on their side, they've got good news coming, news after news after news, bounty after bounty. And we haven't really heard about that very much since October, and I think that's deafening. We don't have a TV deal yet announced for Liv in the United States. It might not happen. Might happen, might not. There's been some rumor that they might air on the CW network, which if you like Smallville, I don't even know if that's still on. I'm too old for that anyway. But if you like those kinds of shows, then that's where you could watch Liv Golf potentially. If that doesn't work out, I'm not sure where it works out, to be honest with you. It doesn't sound like the Fox thing's going to work out. Or if it does, it's going to be a time buy, and I don't think they really want to do that. They want to get paid a little bit. So if that doesn't work out, big trouble. Lots of trouble. But we'll see what happens. The departures mean something. And people leave when they've been brought in and paid handsomely, and they leave, whether it's their own volition or they've been pushed out. That tells you something. Having been involved in a startup back in the day called Back 9 Network, you knew when people came in, they were brought in to do a job. And when they left, that means they either didn't do the job or found the job too repulsive or too impossible to pull off. So we'll see what happens there with Liv. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Off the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. You can listen to us on your favorite podcasting service. Watch us on our website, golfnewsnet.com, on YouTube, and listen on GNN Radio on TuneIn, Radio Line, our website, name the place. You can check us out there. Thank you so much for checking in with us once again, and we will talk to you tomorrow on Two Off the First.